Blog Talk Radio.
And I can make a firm pledge under my plan, no family making less than $250,000.
Let me say it as simply as I can.
Any form of
transparency and the rule of law will be the touchstone of this president.
That, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Even presidents need reminding that our rights come from nature and God and not from government. The right that makes all the difference now is the right to choose our own leaders. And you are entitled to the clearest possible choice, because the time for choosing is drawing near.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is proud to present your favorite hillbilly, Mr. Kevin Harned.
With the whole gang, we've got the whole house in here tonight, including Richard Blowers, Terry Blowers, been kind to join us, along with Tracy Lever. Tracy, I expect some input from you tonight, not just your usual quiet self. Greg Harned is also in the building, along with Dean Whiteman and intern Josh. Outside of that, we're going to have some on the serious side, some on the other flip side of the coin. We like to try to have some fun, too. And in that process, hopefully tonight, we'll do a little of both. But I'm going to look for some help from you all, too, as far as that goes. Well, you guys, we just got done eating a bite over at R.T. Weiler's down in the beautiful old town, St. Charles, Missouri.
Wonderful food.
Some wonderful food. I don't know. What do you guys, I mean, was you
friendly.
Happy with everything that you had?
Oh, excellent.
Some gentlemen that were playing some music that happens
the
to
Ohms
be of a genre.
Brothers. The Ohms Brothers.
The Ohms Brothers. If you've never heard them before, they play a wide variety of music, a lot of it from the 70s and some from the early 80s.
What night of the week are they there, Kevin?
Well, that would be Wednesday night. So
cool.
You can swing on by. Many times we're there between 7 and 8.
Actually,
on
most
the course
weeks,
of that.
That's true. No. It's better than a horse. No, it isn't.
Like the horse.
Did you come when he auctioned the horse?
No.
We had a horse.
A live horse.
What kind?
An old paint.
I think it was actually a quarter horse.
Oh.
Was it a quarter horse?
I think it was.
Yes, it
if
was.
If I'm not mistaken.
It was at least
painted
a quarter,
quarter
maybe
horse.
Maybe a half.
Yeah. It was like 12 years old.
Was it gated?
It would be cheaper
yes.
than a whole
no. I'm just the auctioneer. What's gated mean?
That means, you know, it either can canter.
Oh.
What's canter mean?
You were able
That's
to ride.
Ride.
You were able to ride on it. I know that.
No, it would handle children
well,
very well.
And yes.
Neck rank?
Yes. I'm on Facebook, but the company is not.
Why is that?
Because I am new at this, and I am getting better. It will be soon.
I shake my head.
In shame, don't say it. So.
Not toward me.
Greg, way to put the guy on the spot, Greg. Way to put the guy on the spot. Speaking of putting a guy on the spot, we've been kicking around during dinner tonight, many different topics. As Greg, I thought I had to check to make sure I was, you know, in this universe still.
Right.
He got to talking about it, and he's like, you know, what doesn't make sense is the way that they really, really, really try to...
Who's they?
They being many in the press, being many, many politicians. A lot of people will call you a fearmonger, and they will also really, really throw it out there like you're some kind of a radical nut because you're hoarding things. You know, in the old days, and Tracy brought this up too, you know, living on a farm or something, it really was no big deal to have even 2 years' worth of food canned.
Absolutely.
And stored. For one thing, if you had a bad year on your vegetation, I mean your potatoes, your corn, anything else, then which could happen. It could happen from drought. It could happen from insects. It could happen from a lot of disease, a lot of different things. So you wanted to have that stockpiled. You had always had a couple of years of wood
mm-hmm.
for the fireplace. And the wood stove. So you were prepared. You had water that was stored many times in some different, you know, some different fashions. A lot of people call them cisterns, a lot of other means, mm-hmm. you know. So in all honesty, they were much better prepared whenever they had less dependable means of just swinging by. Many times we will swing by the grocery store on the way home and just pick up a couple of items from what we want to fix that night. So our long-term vision on preparation is weak. Anytime you look at it, you're hearing accusations of, if these wackos wouldn't store this stuff up, then the prices wouldn't be high, and this wouldn't happen, and that wouldn't happen, you know, and it's... what happened to preparation? Yeah. Even the government says, you know, to be prepared at least 3 days. So, you know, they say 3 days, but really what's 3 days going to buy? Like
three days
will keep you from getting hungry.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's about the extent of it. As far as any kind of long-term thing, you look at what's going on in Japan, you look at a lot of other situations, all you have to do, and that was a real eye-opener for me, and we touched on it in here before, go in a grocery store whenever they predict a heavy ice or a heavy snow.
Right.
And it is amazing on just a forecast how empty the shelves are. Now, if you think, living in Missouri, that you're not going to experience a major earthquake or anything along those lines, if a tornado is anything, if a natural disaster of any kind of magnitude really does happen in a state, groceries are going to go quick. And especially any kind of thing that affects the highways, the bridges, anything along those lines, and they're not going to get restocked real quick.
No.
We saw a lot of the calamity down in around Katrina, a lot of that situation. And you know, the thing is that have we really learned anything? And I would say no. And again, we demagogue and criticize the people that do get prepared and call them nuts.
Call them separatists or survivalists?
Whenever they used to encourage it from the governmental level.
Right.
They used
right.
to say, you know, be
up
ready,
even
be prepared.
The 50s.
Absolutely, all the time.
The Cold War, they would give you, had pamphlets, you would have instructions on what to do in case of a disaster. They wanted you to keep your family intact and fed until you can receive government help.
The government used to send out packets of seeds for families to have their own gardens in their yards.
Well, wouldn't we like to have a bunch of those seeds today? Those were pre-bio-engineered. Those are probably all the natural things. And
yep. Only the whack jobs have them now.
Yay!
We got a whack job or two in here. I had a whole room full of them.
Right.
Quack. But... But, Richard, I mean, you've talked about some different things. I know that you, like, got a couple of firearms. You, like, am I mistaken to take on that you've recently got a dehydrator?
Yeah, we decided we wanted to try to make some dehydrated foods, beef jerky, maybe sausage, fruit stuff, make some healthy snacks. But also, a lot of that stuff can be stored for quite some time, and it's a lot more healthy than the bag of potato chips is. So we've had it about 2 weeks, and we're just kind of experimenting right now, trying to find out what's good and what we can make. And made our first batch of jerky last weekend.
I love jerky.
And you know,
what's wrong with that?
Oh, it's good stuff.
All the way around. I made powdered eggs.
Powdered eggs?
What?
Yes.
You made powdered eggs?
I made powdered eggs.
You know, we've been trying to buy powdered eggs.
You cannot get them since
we started looking in October, and used to be able to buy.
Even
on the
web,
everybody sold out. And
they were pulled from the shelf.
Well, they say that it was for, they changed the regulations on the labeling of the eggs. That's what originally showed up on the websites that we actually ordered some. We got everything else, but we didn't get the powdered eggs. And they're still not available. They said it would be like 30 days to 6 weeks before they got them back.
You made your own powdered eggs.
Yeah.
How were they?
That's pretty amazing.
I don't know. They're in the freezer.
I'm pretty
cool. We haven't tried them yet, yeah.
Oh, gotcha. With the dehydrator.
No, yeah. You have to scramble them first.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh. Cook them in the skillet.
You have to cook them. You scramble them. You do not add any butter, any type of fluid. You can add, like, salt and pepper or that, which I didn't because if I want to bake cakes or something, I don't want pepper in my cakes. So I just scrambled the eggs, chopped them up, put them in the dehydrator. I think it was like 130.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember.
Took them a while, didn't it?
Took them a while, yeah. And
130 is in an hour and 30 minutes?
No. 130 degrees.
No, but I think it was higher than that. I have to remember.
Somewhere upwards.
But anyway, I dehydrated them, and I take them out the next day, and I'm like, whoa. And I put them in a coffee can, and I'm shaking them. I'm like, whoa, this is going to be fun. This is going to break my blender up, you know. So I threw them in the blender, and I started them out low, you know, breaking them up. And then I put them on the highest speed, and now they're powder. And 1 tablespoon of powdered eggs and 2 tablespoons of water equals 1 egg.
Wow. Now, did you have a recipe for that, or did you just
I went on the internet and looked at it. Of course, you know, you have to be careful because, you know, eggs, salmonella, you've got to be careful with that. You've got to make sure that, you know, you cook them good. and everything. If you're going to use them as a dry product, like in cakes or something like that, you don't have to rehydrate them. You just throw in a tablespoon of an egg.
I'll be.
You know, I've got them in the freezer, and they will last 5 years.
Wow. Now, you guys,
in a freezer.
Just in a case like that, I mean, what kind of price range is a good dehydrator in that you guys have found?
We got one at Cabela's on sale for $279. It was regularly $329, a commercial brand.
But that's a pretty good one.
Yes.
Yeah. You can get them really cheap.
You can get them for less than $100.
That's the kind that I currently have.
The round, is it the round one with the
plastic? Yeah,
it's
not real.
And you know, the big thing. I'm not happy with mine either.
Well, the big thing with those is that's for a few things. But if you want to do a volume of stuff, you know, we can do 10 pounds of Michigan apples sliced and still have
one time.
Two shelves left over. Yeah,
that's the main thing. When you're looking at a dehydrator, you want to be able to control the temperature. And these cheaper ones, you can't. And you have
you
to
just
be,
plug them in, they heat up, right?
And meat has to be at least 140. At least 140 to be able to kill any bacteria that might be in it.
Even through a dehydrator. Yeah. What did they do back in the old Western days when
they cured it with salt and
chemical, basically salt and then heat, then lay it on rocks.
We used to smoke our own meat.
Right. Yeah, we've smoked. Mm-hmm. I've been part of that incident myself. That's delicious,
that's a long process, too.
Smoked, yes, and then by the time you cut all the mold off and everything, then it's good stuff.
I was
going to
say, let's not forget many of the people in the Old West died out there.
He knows our voice of reason here. I mean, there is a reason maybe why they had that lifespan of like 40.
50
years max. Thank you.
Yay!
And to be honest, I mean, if it was half-molded meat or nothing,
right,
you're going to eat
the half mold. You got
penicillin. And I've got, and to be honest with you, I mean, the homeless are really around to teach us something, if nothing else. Those guys eat food out of dumpsters, and it don't kill them. Now, if we stopped and ate the food out of the dumpster, we'd probably die immediately. You build up a tolerance, I think.
Very true.
You know, through your lifestyle.
I think you're right.
Well, I know one thing. I expected more participation by Miss Tracy Lever.
Oh, she's warming up.
But she's just, I guess we're a little bit off topic.
No, I'm with Tracy. I've got the same little cheesy dehydrator.
Yeah.
And what it does is it molds your food usually, but if it's got any content to it before it cures it, doesn't it?
Yes.
Everything comes out looking like a big pancake.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about one or two more items that you might want to put on your disaster list as far as just a preparation for any kind of natural disaster and you name it. In just a few moments, we're going to take a quick break. Bring it right back. Welcome back to Truth Matters and the disaster episode. Really wasn't kind of in the works or in the plan, but we want to make sure that the insomnia medication sells good at Walmart and Kmart tonight as people try to get to sleep after listening to this show.
I've seen Mike's labeling of his podcast, and he had disaster on half of them.
How will we know?
Oh, boy. How do you follow that up? I'll tell you how. One of the other one of the other things that it seems to be a really neat little item that you can pick up at Cabela's or another store, but they seem to go a little more with the camping gear and stuff Cabela's does.
They do.
Bass Pro seems to be a little more of the sports type environment. But on the camping gear, one of the things was a thermos that Greg always talking about.
Microfilter.
That is a microfilter, and it actually can filter out thousands of gallons of water.
Really?
So, I mean, why store like
100 gallons of water or whatever?
100 single, save like 100 milk jugs and store that whenever you can have a little filtration system that you just pour the water in and then pour it out. And now, from what I understand, these guys can take it and pour, siphon off some river water.
Well, that's why I found out about it. I was buying a fly rod in reel. I'd do some bass fishing, but not really fly fishing. And I thought, well, there's something else I could be not very good at. So I purchased me one of those. I was talking to the guy at Cabela's, and he's like, well, I tell you what I do. He goes, we were talking about the pleasures of fly fishing. You go and you get on a river, and you go a certain distance. You can't really pack a lot of things with you. You've got a little bit of gear. You've got your vest. He goes, I just carry they had microfilter bottles over here, and he said, I just carry it along empty, and when I get thirsty, I dip it in and drink it right out. I want you got to be kidding me. I mean, you don't get any E. coli or...
Or what's the one that is the little virus that causes you to have diarrhea that
will all you... You can get Hep A in water.
Can you? Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mike Gilazon had it.
He did. I cannot think of it for the life.
Right.
I can't think
but,
of it.
But anyway, that's how I became aware of these things. I didn't even know they existed. So I went back and I started reading the labels. They start out at like $40 or $50. They'll do so many bottles. It's gallons, thousands, though. And then you get up to 100 and so. And I imagine that there's probably some you can get that will go far beyond that. But I'm talking about what I found.
Within a reasonable price range that would be good for...
If we had $100, $100, they would do up to like 12,000 gallons.
Well, they make little straws that are the same thing, that you can just, if you find a small amount of water, you can put the straw in it, drink it through the straw, and the straw is the filter. And it, you can carry that in your pocket and, you know,
that's
virtually
military.
Nothing. That, it's a military item. I don't know how to sell them.
Why store up all the water? If you look at the technology today, we can start finding
in the water.
That's
things that will work that make a lot more sense in storage, if you can do it.
But you got to remember also, if you depend on electricity to get your water to your house,
and city water.
What good
why
is it?
I live by a creek.
Yeah.
We have a well.
I had a well.
As long as I got power to turn on, we had no water.
Right.
I had a well, and the government took it away because of the contamination from a nuclear facility close to my house.
Yeah.
No, they closed it down. They gave me a few thousand
bucks.
Where do
you live? I want to make sure.
Hematite, Missouri.
Hematite.
Oh my God.
ABB or Westinghouse at the time.
They actually make the fuel rods for the nuclear power.
Now, see, I think we should just rethink nuclear power.
I'm not ready to go off on
that. Looking real good to me right now.
No, they have guys walking around in suits forever, but it was a cleaning chemical that they used to clean things. The contaminated supposedly.
And we
got to
also figure, too, we're going back to the 1940s.
And I didn't have a choice. They came up and they said we were going to do it, and that's it. It was a brand new well. And I'm the last one with one left in my yard. Everybody else's, they fixed, took out. Mine's sitting there with a cap on it. And I'd like to just say, leave it there. I have the resources to uncap it. If worse comes to worse.
Mm-hmm. Now, whenever you tie into to city water, like I did recently, they will actually, the Department of Natural Resources in Missouri will make you disable your well.
Yes, that's what.
Before they will allow you to tie into city water. They will force you to plug it.
Why is that? Do they have a reason for that?
Good luck getting
it. Well, that might be that he lives in the hematite area.
I do,
also.
But I don't think it's only for that. I think it's something that they're implementing in other areas, too. And I
think it's just.
I mean,
that can
I wanted to
you.
Keep it around so you could water the lawn with it or do some other things with it.
But
I mean, even if you want,
well, that's what I told
them. You're watering the lawn with the well.
I told them, hey, leave me the well. I tried to negotiate that in. Leave me the well. I'll just use it to water my yard, my plants. It was wonderful water. I haven't made you glow at night.
A little radioactive.
It was wonderful water, but they wouldn't. They wouldn't go for it. They went, no, you're plugging. You've got to plug it. We'll run county water up. So they did. They spent $1 million getting me county water and plugged it up.
They claim ours wasn't tainted because only those on the other side was. But they
we were heavy water users over there.
The other side.
My side. It was me.
The plant of the creek.
Oh, of the creek.
So you have in water flows and under the ground you have like rivers. I mean, they actually move in a certain direction.
Sure.
And they're saying it can't go that way because of the movement of the water. Even though I'm probably quarter of a mile at best.
You're closer than I am.
Yeah, I am closer than you. Supposedly on the other side of the waterfall, I guess you could say.
Right.
Is there anything else that somebody might think that you really can't dehydrate or powder that might be interesting? I mean, as far as myself, I love my eggs pickled.
Canning butter.
Canning
butter. I found the recipe for canning butter. You can can butter.
So it lasts.
Cut it on a shelf.
Doesn't have to be refrigerated.
Doesn't have to be refrigerated.
It lasts for like 80 years already, doesn't it?
Yeah, so can you imagine how long
yeah,
that
would be incredible.
Yeah, I heard margarine never goes bad.
No, there was a guy at the home show in St. Louis that had one that was like 22 years old at a stick that wasn't. He didn't even put in the fridge.
Took a bite right just, off of it.
No, he didn't, but he would show everybody. And it looked good.
Like White Castle.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Those only go bad when you eat them.
Oh, yeah, they do.
There's a new slogan.
Dean is the thinking on the slogan
always,
in there
always.
As his auctioneer.
No, I guess I wouldn't like that.
But anyway, you started it off, I think, the point you were going to make. Well, we got,
just
I veered
simple
you.
Preparation.
Well, the fact that the government used to encourage.
Now it's very much discouraged.
That. Now it's you're treated as you're a leper or some kind of radical. I mean, who in the world, listeners out there, who in the world wouldn't feel guilty as you can be if you were out of necessity? Let's say something knocked out the electrical grid. What if you couldn't feed your family
for a month?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's very easy to feed your family for a month if you just do some research. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you agree,
yeah.
Richard?
Oh, yeah.
It got tricky in southern Missouri when they had all that ice.
Oh, yeah.
There was some major emergency.
I mean, who out there, though, wouldn't feel some guilt about them if their family was in that much need and you could have just prepared a little bit? I'm not talking about you being part of a group that's planning to, you know, be lifted up to outer space by a spaceship in 2012. What date is that, by the way, in 2012?
December 21st, 2012.
Okay,
yeah,
but I'm not talking about that kind of nut. I'm just talking about feeding your family with basic essentials until something, a natural disaster such as Japan had, if the rest of the world wouldn't be around. But what happens if it would be a natural disaster that would cripple some other countries as well, and everybody's looking after themselves?
Well, you're not talking about doing anything extra. You know, a lot of people have extra money in the bank and savings earning 0.5% interest. It would make sense to get a few hundred dollars at minimum and go buy some canned food, some meat, some vegetables, powdered milk, stuff like that. That'll sit on a shelf for a long time. Instead of that, it's like an investment. Instead of it sitting in the bank, it's sitting downstairs in your basement or wherever you keep it. If anything happens, you got it. If you get a blizzard, power out, if there's no food in the grocery store, if you can't get to the grocery store for a number of days, you're covered. Most of that stuff you don't even have to cook. You can eat it right out of the can. It might not be as tasty, but it's, as far as nutrition goes, it's right there. It, you know, it's just a little bit of planning ahead and thinking a little bit, and especially people that have families. You know, you got young kids and stuff. They don't understand that you don't have food because you can't get out of the house or a grocery store is not open or something like along those lines. So, you know, it's
medical necessities too would be important.
Medical necessities.
Medical
some of the
necessities.
Simple things too. It's a lot of things that are looked
animal
over.
Penicillin if you have to.
What's wrong with aspirin?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's some people can't tolerate it, but most can. Just simple low peroxide.
Very cheap.
You're looking
bleach.
At very, very. Definitely, you know, you definitely want to keep a gallon of bleach around.
Cayenne pepper is a good blood clotter.
Really? Pour it right on or take it internally?
To pour it, if you got a deep cut, you can put cayenne pepper. It'll burn like crazy, but it won't clot the blood.
Mike would like to experiment with that. Would you mind if next week, that's a week?
We're going to do a live demonstration.
Because, of course, Greg, when you're bleeding to death, you want to ingest the cayenne pepper.
Believe it or not, that was a mind teaser to see who's listening.
For the show, tell us some of your ideas or thoughts as far as some of the things that you've got set aside for any kind of an emergency. A lot of people, leaves aren't that attractive. A lot of people, one of the things that you really appreciate when you don't have any is like toilet paper.
Yeah.
Some of this other stuff that, I mean, they're,
at Sam's, you
the alternatives really aren't too
cases?
Comfortable.
No.
Or like
I get a little distraught if I don't have at least two big cases of toilet paper in my house.
I mean, actually, a guy at our church said that one of his neighbors, he found out, were without power, without essentials. You know, they were really down and out, I'll put it that way, for whatever reasoning, I'm not sure. But he said he talked to him one day, and he said the girl looked at him and said, "You know what I miss the most?
Oh, no.
Yeah, toilet paper. And he said he had never thought about it before in his life. And he went, oh, my gosh. Oh, that would be horrible to be without.
I do know one thing. You know, whenever people...
Aren't we spoiled?
When people think...
Yes, good.
Hopefully more than one. One of the things that people really feel like they're well-stocked, and if you, unless you really think about it, is they could have their freezer completely stacked full. But if the power's out, A, it's not being frozen, and B, you're not going to cook it. I mean, unless you've got gas or some other means to cook it, maybe a charcoal grill. So, I mean, you do want to go with the dried or canned goods in those kind of scenarios. Even, you know, I'm sure it's not up there like on the best of nutrition, but even a can of ravioli you can open up and eat.
Be
if
thrilled
you need
to have it. If it all hits the fan.
88 cents, you get a can of ravioli.
Yeah.
That's right. And that's a meal.
That is a meal.
If you got
You're
a can
right.
of green beans, you can split the cans with your other half, and you got a meal for
there you
less
go.
Than a buck and a half.
There you go.
Not only that, but it's our thrifty section.
You know, something else to think about, too, is, you know, people that have generators, you need gas for a generator.
Sure.
You know, a good portable generator will take 7 gallons of fuel to run for like 9 hours. Well, 9 hours, that's not even half a day. And unless you got the facilities to store a bunch of gas, you know, because you think if you're snowed in and or the power's out, can't pump it at the station either. So you got to have a way to have fuel for it. What we did, we have, our house is all electric, but we have a propane tank, a 500-gallon propane tank, and we have our grill hooked up to it and a little heater in the living room. Well, I got a conversion kit for my generator, so now it'll run on either LP, and I can drop a line down from my upper deck and hook it up, and
that
baby can run for a month on that propane.
Very good suggestion, and that's what I was thinking. I've got a small, like, one of the 100-quarter, taller tanks, but I'm going to go ahead and have them bring out a bigger tank. Because of that,
yeah.
Get yourself a generator and a converter.
Yeah, I had to get a conversion kit. It was about $275, but I was able to put it on at home, and you know, now I just.
And if you listeners think you're listening to a bunch of knuckleheads, you are. But let me throw this out there: a friend of mine in Kentucky, they had that terrible ice storm like 2 or 3 years ago.
Right.
3 weeks.
It also went through southern Missouri.
Yes, it did. And in Kentucky, it was extreme.
Right.
And some of those in his area were without power for 3 weeks. Well, he at the time went ahead and invested in one of the larger in-house systems, and he had just gotten it hooked up that fall. He had it for like 2 years, but it was an investment. So it took him enough money to get it collected, but he finally got it hooked up. And, you know, he said for a 3-week period, and he lives on this hillside, and he's the only house up there. And he said you could see that because of the darkness of the whole region. You could see that like a mount sitting up there. He started feeling guilty. Everybody was staring at him. Because he said, his house was running. He had electric, but he said he was about the only house within its whole miles and miles and miles.
Well, if you live in town, you get natural gas, you can hook it up to natural gas.
Right,
right.
And it'll run for a
long
time.
But if there's an infrastructure break,
that's
right.
True, too.
Yeah.
A bad earthquake, something along those lines. It's not guaranteed
to
be
like
operational.
We don't have people camped at the New Madrid Fault Line right now, do we?
No. I mean, what is that, the New Madrid Fault? I mean, you know what I mean? We forget about it. It just goes on until, like, Japan, till tsunami hits you.
Now, I hear St. Louis has a lot of caves, so if we had an earthquake, would St. Louis...
Well, St. Louis...
let me tell you something. I watched mega disasters.
There we go.
Here we go.
All right, Nat Geo.
All right.
There's, it's going to be chaos at St. Louis.
Right.
I'll just put it that way.
Well, one of the things that St. Louis has got in the St. Louis region has got very sandy soil. So anytime you have any kind of major movement in an earthquake situation, it kind of liquefies or at least is very destructive. It's very hard to support buildings and stuff on that kind of soil.
So that's what causes all the caves and stuff in there, I guess, kind of the sandy.
Well, the caves are actually the hard rock. They're mined. A lot of the caves are mine caves in this area, but there's a lot of natural caves, too. But
there's a lot of sinking in St. Louis.
Yeah, because all the clay in the river, and then,
many, many moons ago, back in Greg's day. There was one big lake in this area. You know?
Yeah, it was. No, true.
Back when this was an inlet from the ocean.
No.
Yeah.
That was before the tsunami of, what was it? That's one of the things. I'll tell you what, if we,
1813,
if we get hit by a tsunami here, we are in serious doo-doo.
Yeah, we are. Now, that's some water.
Well, a lot of other people are, too.
Well, yeah, yeah. There's a lot more in between us. And wherever we're very centrally located.
You know what tsunamis remind me of? Earthquakes. You know what earthquakes remind me of? Breaks. You know what breaks remind me of?
And welcome back with special edition, as we've got Richard Blowers, Terry Blowers, and Tracy Lever in studio with us tonight, along with Dean Whiteman, Greg Harned, myself, and Josh, the intern, who has been also very quiet this time. We just need to look at a lot of different things. First of all, we have to do something with the energy situation, or it's just not going to get any better. Tracy touched on it. We got to quit attacking coal. We got to start looking. I mean, you know, we have to start utilizing our resources. We have to start opening up. I think I saw that 60% of the oil wells that are still in the Gulf are not operational right now because they won't let them function. They won't let them drill. They won't let them pump the oil.
Yeah, they're helping George Soros with his.
But
right.
What if we're looking at all the other resources that are untapped? I mean, we have to. Well, it's kind of funny. Whenever everybody's saying that they want to explore all of these energy sources, well, no, they don't. They just want to explore all the ones that they want to. They don't want to actually utilize the ones that have been proven.
So are you saying they have an agenda?
Well, absolutely.
What?
I'm sorry.
Well, just remember, Jimmy Carter in the 70s started the Department of Energy, whose sole purpose at the time was to get us off dependence of foreign oil. Where's that gone?
How many people does that employ, that department?
Like $39 billion.
It was a stimulus plan, Richard. It was an early stimulus plan. We're going to put people to work.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, we're taking your tax dollars to do it, and it'll turn into a negative. But
that's one department that I think, if you interviewed 999 people, they couldn't name one thing that department has accomplished, the Department of Energy. Most of the time, what is our energy plan?
We don't have one.
No.
Right. And when have we? So, I mean, if you want to start cutting funds, why not start with that area?
Eliminate that whole department. They don't do anything. And if they think they are, they haven't accomplished a thing, because we're more dependent on oil today than we ever have been.
We get a lot of our oil from Canada.
Yeah, that on a commercial.
We do, and actually we touched on a lot of that on that last show that we had last week. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I had seen in 2002, 19% of our trade deficit was oil importation. In 2008, 47% of our trade deficit was oil importation. Look at the effects that's also having on the economy.
The Department of Energy is doing a good job, by the way.
Absolutely.
My husband worked on that pipeline that they're putting through from Canada.
Really?
Mm-hmm. One of the weird things that they had him doing, though, you could not go when you operated your heavy equipment. They had the topsoil, and if you went into the bottom soil, that was really bad, and you weren't supposed to harm any indigenous creatures, and he ran over a snake. He picked it up with his little shovel, dropped it in some wood, and buried it so he wouldn't
get caught. Oh,
it's a good thing there were no witnesses. We had to
tell his story on an international.
He's not working there. It's stupid. You're going to run over a critter when you're out there in the woods.
How far down are we talking to? What's good soil?
By the way, lady, how'd you get in here? I don't even know you.
who is that?
Where did Tracy go? What is your name, ma'am? Margaret? Or is it Annie?
Annie.
And okay. I wonder what they would have done to you had they found out that you had hurt a creature or anything like that.
I don't know.
See, they're so worried about harming one little snake or maybe a woodland duck, as opposed to curbing the nation's problem that we're having with, you know, having to insource all of our oil. It's insane.
Just snake been done by now.
On the other hand, you're right. On the other hand, it's the same people, though, that want to stop coal.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
You're little tree huggers.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same people that charge of a lot of what.
Where's the windmills? Where are the windmills?
Well, I heard there's hundreds of them out in
Kansas, and they're hardly turning.
There's a lot of restrictions in some areas, too.
There are plenty, but they're not in my backyard.
Right.
I haven't seen
that. Was that your Kennedy response?
I put in for some stimulus money so I could put a windmill in my yard.
Yeah. Well, the environmentalists hate the windmill, too, because it kills the birds.
I don't know what it's done. One of the things that we touched on last week was like the 25 worst shows.
Ours was number three.
We're really striving for number one, and you can make it happen. You can help us make it happen.
Sure.
And one of the other things was the 25 best shows. This is all according to TV Guide. We wasn't in that.
No,
list
of
either.
All time.
Well, it's because it was TV.
You know, if you guys just around this table, Richard, if you had to name one, let's say series or show, you would probably say that you may have rearranged your schedule just a little bit to catch. Now, you got to figure, too. I mean, in recent years, we've all there's so many different ways to catch them at our convenience.
Sure.
You got TiVo, you could record them, you got all different. Not only that, but they're repeated many times. I'm sure there's a couple of you that remember whenever we had like five stations. And they went off every night.
We were lucky if we had five.
Yeah.
1:30 a.m. on Saturday.
It had to be a really good day.
KPLR in St. Louis. I mean, I remember Saturday, whenever they had the Bijou Picture Show.
Oh, yeah.
That, where they didn't go off the air until like 1:30 in the morning.
That's right.
And that was big time.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, that was whenever you
Yeah, you're
dead.
Right. The Bijou Picture Show. Yeah. That was like vacation.
It was 1:30 or 2 o'clock. It was amazing that it didn't go off until then. You know, you drug out your sleeping bags and, I mean, stayed up. You got rest on Friday night to make sure that you can make it.
You got that little color wheel that came on after they went off the station.
That's right.
Yeah, with the sound. With the
now, that's hard to fathom. So, I mean, it's just like whenever I was younger and you missed the Christmas special. When you missed the Christmas special, if you missed, you know, Peanuts Christmas or
it's
whatever.
It's over till next year.
Next year. Till next year you're done.
Wizard of Oz.
Oh, that's right.
One of the
year.
Network and it's continuing.
Right.
He's like,
now it is.
I have no idea.
I mean,
like, that was back when we came over.
This really wasn't that long. Believe it or not, it's not like old as dirt by no means. What in recent, let's just say, what program did you really enjoy?
Yeah, just don't. Used to be don't bother me on Monday night because 24 was on.
24.
Yep, that was my favorite show.
That was Jack Bauer, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Somebody was blowing up somebody.
Constantly. That's a man show.
That was a man show. Greg,
I'm not saying a woman don't appreciate it. I did like 24, and I'll tell you, I was flipping through the channels. I'm not saying it's my very favorite, but I am going to give you a quick rundown on it. What attracted me to it. This sounds bad, but Jack was in with his boss. And they had a drug dealer who was also a pedophile. And they were talking about letting him off.
In case
he was
going to
walk. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Jack grabs the boss's gun, clips him, and then looks over at him and says, "You got a knife?" And I'm going, "What the heck? This is in the office." And he pulls up.
He actually said, "Get me a hacksaw."
That's what he said. What? He took the guy's head off.
Right.
And I went, "This is interesting."
Oh, my God.
Wait a minute.
No.
The guy was going to walk scot-free. He was a pedophile. And this guy did what every American man wants to do.
I would put Abby against your Jack Bauer any day on NCIS.
Who? Who?
Abby.
Oh, I don't watch NCIS.
Abby on NCIS.
After seeing a man's head taken off.
Yeah.
It wasn't
Terry,
of it.
Any particular show?
Glenn
Beck. Okay. TV or radio?
TV. I work 7 to 7. So I get up at 3:30 because I come home from work.
Right.
I try to get to bed by 9 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So I can get up at 3:30, jump in the shower, get all ready for work by 4 o'clock so I can watch Glenn.
And I'm usually on my way home from work. And I know, don't call after 4.
Okay.
Well, that's
talking
to
a bucket because
she's
floating somewhere else.
That's arranging a schedule around.
Right.
Josh, anything with you there, Mr. Intern?
No, I mean, not any general shows today. The only thing I really watched was Overhauling or the Speed Channel. I mean,
okay. So it's more of a channel thing with you.
Yeah.
Those are great for TiVo, and I found.
Last time I can remember hurrying home to see a show was the Wonder Years, so I'm going back a solid 15 years. I do remember I got a ticket, though, coming through Peabody on the way home, and I tried to get out of it.
For the Wonder Years?
And it was for the Wonder Years, yeah. Stupid, I know, yeah.
No.
51 and a 35. I liked Winnie Cooper, the whole scenario.
Could you explain that to the officer?
It was it was a funny show.
Not a Peabody officer.
I did like
it. Right, thank you.
You know, I did like the Wonder Years. Believe it or not,
it's like Boss Hogg there. You know, you get this thing out there. You're in trouble. Speed trap.
That was one of the best shows.
I got off
shows.
In Peabody one time, and it was one of the most amazing things. I mean, the officer was literally hot. He was ticked that he let me off, but he had to. He couldn't do it. Dad and I was coming back. We was in Dad's old ratty truck.
Yeah.
We were coming back from texturing a big house, covered head to toe in compound and paint, and that old beat up truck.
Late in the evening too.
And it was, you know, he couldn't give me a ticket.
Yeah.
He couldn't bring himself to, and he was so ticked.
Oh, I bet he was.
Oh, he gave me a verbal reaming, but he let me go. And he even included this. He goes, oh, I'd give you a ticket, but I imagine you've got other things you could use your money on. You know? Yes, sir, officer, I do. You know? But he was hot.
That's great.
Tracy, anything?
You didn't get a ticket.
I didn't, no.
You're like my brother. My brother was going 100 miles an hour in Arkansas, and a highway state patrolman pulled him over. And I'm sitting there going, you're going to jail. I'd be going to jail. I'm serious.
I would go to jail as well.
Well,
they let him go with a warning because some good old boy in Missouri let this guy off. He come back and he goes, I got a warning.
Wow.
I'm like, no, I
don't get a warning on anything.
No, I don't either.
I'm gonna start selling some kits. Okay?
Yeah.
We talked about that.
Spritz
too.
Spritz yourself with mud.
No, and we are no, not just that, but maybe some eye patches and arrows through the head, that kind of a thing. So whenever they pull over, they have enough sympathy on you to, you know, just say,
no,
well,
you
sure,
just,
I was on my way to the hospital.
You just have one of those faces. My husband does.
That nightmares are made of.
I
he does have one of those faces.
He does.
Only ones he scares old people and little kids.
Obviously not.
No, you know what?
No,
old people
scare.
That was
all right. He said that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
well, I know.
Yeah.
It's
old people and young kids. Because they're on their cell phone and
young kids, I find to be the worst. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They are. They have no fear with the texting, the talking.
No, they don't.
It's
they
just
don't have.
They don't realize yet.
Nope, absolutely not. Many times you don't get a second chance.
Right, that's the problem.
Tracy, anything? Any show?
Stargate Universe.
Stargate
Universe.
Okay.
It's a little risque, but they've got some risque stuff in it.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never got it.
Is that
like
the second one? I remember Stargate.
Oh, God, they've got so many.
Oh, Universe.
They have
like
Stargate,
Star Trek,
then
now.
They have Stargate Atlantis, and
I would
Stargate
say,
Universe.
I went as far as Atlantis.
I would say one of the shows that I would actually, the last one I can remember kind of rearranging some things for was Lost. And that was in the earlier episodes.
I really, the last season
I didn't watch.
You didn't watch Lost?
I didn't watch.
I was lost every time.
That's the name.
Mike, anything on your part there, producer? Now, one of the things that I really enjoyed for the short time that it was on, and they did their absolute best to sync it. They moved it around to different nights all the time. And I really tried to watch it. I enjoyed it, and it was the newer Dark Shadows. And that one there, if you remember, I mean, they would move it from Tuesday to Thursday to 9 o'clock
to 7
o'clock.
It was like the playoffs or something of some sort going on.
It was filler.
But this was actually new ones. I mean, they were the first runs.
They were
the first runs, and they moved it.
Of the new Dark Shadows.
And it drove me nuts, and they canceled the series.
It was very good.
A lot of shows that's happened to. Sliders. I don't know if you'd ever remember that. Do you guys remember that? That's
mm-hmm.
another show. Same thing happened to it. I loved the first season, then I couldn't find it.
Different advice as far as some things that would really come in handy. It doesn't have to be like Space Invaders, okay? It could be, you know, Earthquake. It could be anything. It doesn't have to be bizarre black helicopter anything. Not to say that
it doesn't have to be.
Take place.
Right.
as Seinfeld would say. Not that there's anything wrong with
that.
Right,
we like that
but
too.
But anything along those lines, you know, make comments, drop us a line at RadioRocket.net. We want to go around the table real quick. Also, I want to thank you guys for driving up. I know that with the price of fuel and everything else getting up there, and I know that the restaurants are going to start taking major hits again. Because every time, whenever you go to fill up your tank and it's another $15 to $20 higher, one of the first things you don't do is that's a night you don't go out and grab a bite to eat.
That's right.
And those are usually, I mean, it's just my personal feelings. But I look at things as the kind of patterns, and that's one of the things that you see. And there's a lot of restaurants and places that have been open for 50 years that are no longer here. And as this gas creeps up, they're going to be taking more hits and more hits again because people will do the necessities.
You're right.
They'll do what they've got to do. They'll pack their lunch. They'll do some other things. You know, it's amazing what those kind of prices will do for your inconvenience. You'll get up a little earlier and make sure that you make your sandwiches.
Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
This is the Grassroots Minute. Everyone knows that the city of Detroit faces a major financial crisis, but one member of the city council thinks President Barack Obama should step in and help. Nearly 75% of Wayne County voters pulled the lever for Obama in November, and according to Detroit Councilwoman Joanne Watson, President Obama owes the city a government bailout for supporting him in the 2012 election. In a recent council meeting, Watson said,
"After the election of Jimmy Carter, the Honorable Coleman Alexander Young, he went to Washington, D.C. He came back home with some bacon.
Right.
That's what you do. That's what you do. This is our people in an overwhelming way supported the re-election of this president, and there ought to be a quid pro quo, and you ought to exercise leadership on that. Of course, not just that, but why not?"
No, Councilwoman Watson. What you do is stop with the handouts for paybacks and work together to lower taxes and bring business back to Detroit and once again make it the great manufacturing mecca it was. And this is why conservative sites are suggesting that Mitt Romney may have been correct in his assessment that Obama won re-election because he gave voters gifts. I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Father, forgive them, for they know not
me this evening is Pat Walker and, of course, Richard Blowers. And Richard was in on our first session of the emergency preparedness that we did in the last show. And we talked about, we just kind of brushed on food sources, food stuff, some other things about how long you try to at least be prepared for, not to be overwhelmed, you know, just kind of to start. Don't think about a year's worth of goods. You know, just start with, try to get a 72-hour plan. First of all, just one day at a time. Many of us go home. On the way home, we swing by and pick up that night's dinner for us to cook up in the kitchen. And that is what we're talking about as far as just kind of planning a little bit ahead. Richard, welcome this evening. Thanks.
Thanks for having me back.
Pat, always nice to have you in studio.
It's good to be here. I thank you so much. Looking forward to it.
We are missing co-host Greg Harned and Dean Whiteman this evening. Dean's got a big auction tomorrow night. As far as Greg, he is at a concert, so those guys are both well taken care of. In the meantime, Richard, I believe that we had touched on some storage in the last show. As far as even some of the shelf life, a lot of these different foodstuffs, especially in the grain form, if they're stored or properly, can last as long as 30-plus years and still retain all the nourishment. As far as that goes, I mean, the main thing is keeping the bugs out and other things, too, that will deprive the nourishment. And also, you know, they're bugs. Unless you're...
flat out spoil it.
Unless you're Andrew from Bizarre Foods, you know.
Probably don't want to eat that kind
of Pat?
It's protein, isn't it, though? Wouldn't the bugs be protein? Okay, never mind.
I know that you're also a man that's got emergency preparedness close to his heart.
You bet.
And it's a good idea. I remember years ago we'd brushed on it, but we were always encouraged by the government to be prepared for at least 3 days.
Yeah.
And now it seems like many times whenever we are, just like tonight, I got asked before this show started, why now? I mean, you know, why this show, why now? You know, and it's automatically you feel the sensors going up as in the, you know, whack job or whatever have you. I mean, now it's almost frowned upon. It's looked down upon.
Yeah.
And that's a shame. And hopefully we could change some of that. I really see a heavy trend toward awareness in this direction as we speak. On the next show, we're going to try to get into firearms and also some other means of personal self-protection.
Mm-hmm.
That is also part of the game. I mean, you don't have to have it. If you implement any of these particular situations for either a natural disaster or, you know, a man-made situation of one sort or another. It could be any number of things, from a terrorist to economic problems and collapse. If you've ever, you know, a lot of people think that that's a joke, but if you've ever been into a grocery store, even whenever an ice storm is forecast, you're going to see that things don't stay on the shelves very long. If you've ever tried to get a generator after an ice storm, you're going to see that it just doesn't work that way. So it's anything that after an emergency happens, it's too late to really think about any of the supplies or things. Richard, whenever we're talking about different types of food, let's say that we've got it stored. What about preparation? I mean, you know, there are some foods that are meals ready to eat, MREs, and there are some other things that we could talk about as far as some kits, some other things that for those of you that haven't really thought much about it, you could get many kits at Cabela's. One website that I found that's really got a ton of useful information on it is beprepared.com, and I also saw that you had it listed on your list.
Yep.
But yeah, they've just plentiful with different ideas and thoughts and different things. But one of the things you got to think about, and you mentioned some of the stuff, you know, you're not going to want stuff that is necessarily frozen. It's not a very efficient way. For one thing, whenever it thaws out, another thing is you're going to have to cook it unless it's already cooked. You could get some dehydrated stuff or else some grains and freeze them.
Yeah, you can.
You know, canned goods, of course, some of them have a limited shelf life, but the long storage for grain and that makes it ideal. Plus, it's very nutritious and, you know, a lot of protein and everything in it. But you got to have a way to move it from the grain form into something that's usable, either with a grain mill, something to grind up the grain, you know, into flour or wheat, whatever you're going to use it for. And, you know, if you invest in a big electric grinder, well, that's fine if you have power, but you better have some way to power it. So a lot of folks recommend both a powered one and one that you can hand crank to grind the grain. And you ought to get a good one because, you know, if it's an extended time when you're living off this stuff, you don't want it to wear out. You know, it's even suggested you get some extra parts for it, too, the common stuff that goes out to replace. So, you know, along those lines, because those are the longest-lasting foods that you can store. Some of the other stuff, you got to have a way to cook it, too. Not everything, but, you know, if you have electricity, that's fine. You can cook it on the stove. If you have gas or propane, as long as that lasts, then you're good there. You know, a lot of homes are electric and gas. So you can, you might have to light it with a match, but you can get your range to work. If you have propane, same kind of thing. You can have the propane to cook. You can have it to boil water if you have to. But you should also have some way to cook it if you don't have either one of those. If you have to leave and go away from your home, you might be in a vehicle, you might be camping, who knows, but you need to have some way to cook that, either like a camping stove, a Coleman camping stove, some of these little backpacking white fuel type of stoves that you can use too that are real portable. But that's something to think of too, is you got to have a way to prepare it if it has to be cooked. If it's dehydrated or, you know, canned, then you don't really have to worry about that. But stuff out of a freezer, you know, even if you're living off deer or something like that, you got to have a way to cook it too.
So. Right. Well, on top of that too, you mentioned stoves, but one of the issues with that is you're going to have to carry fuel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, or else you're going to have a short cooking span as a matter of days. The other thing is whenever you're talking about these different forms, and there's different things that we can do as far as preparing it. One of them can be even a open pit. Anything along those lines, and we might touch on a little bit of that too as we go. Any input from you, Pat?
Just what you had said at the very beginning, I think it's really important. This isn't so much a discussion about, oh, in relation to government and situations going on, but how quickly society can deteriorate. If you take a look at Katrina and what happened, in a matter of literally hours, society and the way it functions completely falls apart. And it can happen here. And people say, well, how could it happen here? Just a natural disaster here, the tornadoes or an earthquake. If you don't have water, picture just for a little bit, if you do not have clean water and you do not have electricity and you do not have warmth, things quickly fall apart in your life. And I think that's the beauty of this show, is just being prepared. As you said, the motto, be prepared. It's a scout motto also.
You mentioned Katrina. Now, one of the things that you found interesting, I mean, at least I did in that, was a case to where they had some plans laid out that were kind of half-hap. And what did they do? They shipped everybody into central locations. That's not necessarily always the best thing to do whenever you've got a deteriorating situation like that. You know, you better have all your ducks in a row, mm-hmm. if you're gonna gather a bunch of people together. A lot of the people that were actually put in that situation, they were disarmed, and then only the criminals were armed on many of those fronts too. Mm-hmm. So those are a lot of other factors, and that's where the next show is going to be pretty interesting, because we're gonna get into the specifics on the firearms of it. Mm-hmm. One of the things that Richard mentioned just a minute ago, you know, whenever he said you may have to light the stove with a match, well. You know, if you don't smoke, a lot of people don't even have matches around the house. So that would be something else to consider. It's one of those things that could really go right over your head. Yeah. You know, it's easy to find non-smokers to be matchless.
Well, you think about it. I know even at my house, we're all electric, and whenever the wife lights candles or anything like that, she's got one of those extended lighters to do candles. Well, those don't last real long, so yeah, it's a good idea to invest in some stick matches that you can store. And like you were talking about for fires, for cooking, fire starters of some sort that you can get a fire going even in inclement weather. Real small, and the technology on them, I mean, you get a little packet of it, it'll start three or four fires even if it's pouring down rain. So that's, yeah, that's a big item there.
Some of the things that you could even find, you know, it may not be something that you'd use necessarily in the kitchen, but if you go to a Cabela's, there's a Coughlin's magnesium fire starter. You know, you're looking at less than $8, and it puts out a lot of heat. It's kind of neat how they've got a lot of these little things. And some of you that are Boy Scout leaders or anything like that is going to know about a lot of these different products, and a lot about where you can find a lot of these things. You know, people think that the MREs may be unrealistically high or anything, but you can get a 72-hour kit for food and water for one person that has an MRE meals ready to eat format for anywhere to from $50 to $55. And that's not a lot of investment. And believe me, if it ever came down to that, you'd easily give $500, which... or more, you know, right. it really depends on it. It's one of those things to where you don't really, I mean, whatever your water's off or something, you don't really realize it until you go wash your hands or go to the restroom or anything. I mean, you know, it's just, it's stuff that we don't even think about every day. Whenever you flip that light switch and the lights go on, well, when it don't, it's a drastic change. Whenever you flip it, nothing happens. What do you guys... We're gonna go ahead and further talk about water, and Pat touched on this too, but we're gonna also have a discussion on water, and we will carry that on right after this break. Guys, we were just about also to touch on water and water preparedness. A lot of times we always hear you know, jugs of water, some other things. There are some simple things you could do. As far as you know, rinsing out your milk jugs and so forth. But then there is space. There's other things to consider in all this. And also, we consume so much water that it's going to – you could go through – it'd be hard to store enough in those means to really last for very long. One of the things that in another conversation I talked to Pat about briefly was even some of the natural things that you can do to possibly purify water. And he had touched on one that I thought was really interesting. Pat, do you want to?
Sure, sure. I encourage all of you out here listening, SODIS. That's SODIS. Go to the website for information, but I'm just going to review this for you very quickly. This is a wonderful way and a wonderful method to purify water. First off, I want to share something with you. My background's in outdoor survival skills. I used to live up in the mountains in Colorado, lived in Oregon. I'm a scout leader here and have been involved in certain circumstances where you got to know what you're doing. One of the things, here's a myth. A lot of people say, oh, if I got water out of a stream. First off, I'm going to share this. For everybody listening, do not drink water out of a mountain stream. Oh, it's clean and it's pure. No, it's not. That's where the animals pee and poop upstream, and you're going to get it. And so don't do that. What you'll always want to do is purify the water. If not purify the water with chemicals, boil the water. Now, a lot of people say, well, how long do you boil the water for? Folks, people say 10 minutes. That's a myth. You can boil water for less than a minute. If it's boiling and it's boiling hard, you can drink it. It's fine, all right? You'll want to maybe filter it if there's a lot of mud and junk in it, and you can filter it with your T-shirt. Just run it through before you do that. There's another method, two other methods, and I encourage you, go online and check about water for your purification using bleach. All right? A couple of drops of bleach in a container is enough to purify and kill the bacteria that can cause you harm. Now, I encourage you, please go on the internet and read about that. But there's another method that's out there that is really exciting, and again, it's SODIS. We can all do this. We can do this in St. Louis, Missouri. And here's how you do it. We all see those plastic jugs that you buy soda in, those 2-liter jugs, or smaller. Here's the rules. It must be clear plastic. It can't be tinted. Can't be pale yellow, can't be green, can't be blue. It's got to be clear, clear plastic. Take the labels off. Take the bottom off of it so the complete plastic container is exposed. You can go in. I've seen videos of this. You can go into a river. You could go into the Mississippi River and take that water from there, strain it to get the dirt out of it. Just strain it with your T-shirt. Then you can pour that water in that jug. Fill it up to the brim. What you'll have to do then is take it and lay it out on its side, not upright. And folks, this is very important. Do not take the bottle and have it sitting upright on the ground. You lay it flat. It is better if you can lay it on something reflective, either a tin roof or aluminum foil, anything that's reflective. You lay it and have it facing the sun. Have it facing the sun for, I do believe, it's 6 hours. After 6 hours of direct sunlight, if it's cloudy, you may have to do it all day. And folks, people, please listen to this. If you don't do this right, you will get sick and you will get diarrhea. And it's not good, I know. All right? Trust me, it's not
good. I believe him, folks.
Yeah, and it's not, and I'll tell you this, it's not good in the tent either. So you can't unzip it fast enough, let me tell you. Anyway, so what you do is you lay it on its side, facing the sun, and you don't have it laying flat. Have it propped up at an angle, say 45 degrees. The bottle is laying on 45 degrees, facing the sunlight for 6 hours. After that period of time, you can drink that water, and it's safe. It's unbelievable. It is safe. Even water out of the Missouri River, they're doing it in Africa right now. Sodas. Right. It's truly exciting. But again, if the water's really muddy, you'll have to filter it. Also, another rule for you, if you fill this clear plastic bottle up, it can't be a huge jug because then the ultraviolet light, it's the ultraviolet rays that purify the water. If the jug is too big, it will not penetrate the water. So two liter...
Right.
Or smaller.
Right.
45 degree angle. Another key point is if you do this, the water is safe to drink that day. But by the next day, it could start to have bacteria in it again. So then you'd have to do the process again. Something else very important. A lot of people have been doing this and purifying water. They purify the water, and then when it's done, they pour it into another container. Well, guess what? The container that they put it in isn't clean.
Right.
And then they drink the water and they get sick. And people say that's common sense. Well, the articles I've been reading have pointed this out. One last point. When you fill the clear plastic jug up, bottle up, lay it on a piece of newspaper. Just newspaper, regular newspaper. You should be able to see the newsprint through the water. The headlines especially, right. The bigger picture. If you can't, filter the water, again, just through a cloth T-shirt. Drain it through there to get some of the junk, the muck that's in the water out of it. All right? And then you can do it. You can drink it. And that's safe. So those
great
are
advice.
Two key points. Anyway.
Now you mentioned a couple of drops of bleach in a container, but you didn't say necessarily what size.
Great. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Possibly a gallon jug?
Gallon. That is correct. And now I do not have the precise number drops of bleach. You don't want to do too much, naturally. And again, the internet, but you've got to be careful what you read.
Right.
Very careful. Mm-hmm. But go in there and do your research on purifying water. And it's like Richard was talking too with food and Kevin. I think it's really important, folks. We all know you can get by without food for several days. But water, you're going to quickly go downhill. So have your water supplies and address it. And I've talked with Richard about it before, and I know he's very prepared in all those areas, so that's good. Anyway, that's something for water.
You know, they also make purification tablets, right? Mm-hmm. They seem to be relatively inexpensive.
Yep.
That's another route to go if you're a little nervous about the bleach or else some of these other processes. Those can be another thing that you could stock up on. They have individual filtration devices, too, that you can buy at a Cabela's or, you know, from BePrepared.com or some of these other sites. But you could some of them will filter up to 16,000 gallons, and that's on the biological end. You know, they'll completely treat the water to where it's 99.99% clear up to 16,000 gallons of water. Whenever you're looking at that particular unit, you're looking at about $329, I think, at Cabela's. Mm-hmm. I think the filters for those, again, that's a long time to go in between changes, but I think they're just under $200 for any reserve filters.
Yeah, no, on the cheap one, too, that I saw the other day that I might invest in, it's basically a spigot. It works with 2 5-gallon buckets stacked up. The bottom one, you put the lid on it, you drill a hole towards the bottom for a little spigot like on a water cooler. And then in the top bucket, the filter goes through the hole in the bottom. You put a hole in the bottom bucket or the top bucket, and then one in the top of the bottom bucket, so that when you put that through, it goes into the lower 5-gallon bucket. And it's a gravity filtration. And there's a sock filter that goes in the top bucket, and the water drains through that filter into the bottom, and it'll do 14 gallons of water a day. You just have to have a source to pour into it. You probably wouldn't want to pour mud water in it, but rainwater, any other type of water you might find, like spring stream water or something like Pat was talking about, you just pour it in that top bucket. As it drains in, that's purified drinking water. And I think that kit, less the buckets, is like $30.
Right.
I don't know how much replacement filters are or how long it lasts. It probably depends on the quality of water that you're pouring
in
the top. So that's one on the cheap that would easily produce enough water for two or three people every day. Short of going to a $100 filter or something, that's
right.
Another route you can do.
I've seen some $40 and $50 filters that are good for up to, they say, 26 gallons.
Mm-hmm.
But again, what you're talking about will probably last longer than that 26 gallons. I mean, if you can do 14 gallons in a day, then odds are you're going to be able to use it more than 2 days, I'll bet.
Mm-hmm.
And again,
it's going to
depend on the nastiness of the water,
exactly,
too.
Exactly, yeah.
Pat, was there anything else?
One last point I'd like to make about the water, and I really want to be specific here. A lot of people say, well, I'll just save my clear plastic milk jugs from the store, and I'll use those, and I'll lay them on the side. No, it must be a clear plastic. Yes.
Like glass clear almost.
That is correct. By the way, you can also do this with clear glass bottles too. But again, it's got to be clear, not tinted.
Whenever we move along, some of the things, now we had talked about a 72-hour disaster kit. And again, strive for that first. Don't be overwhelmed whenever you're talking about any kind of preparedness. Some of the things that kit should also include would be some pertinent information, could be social security cards, copies of them, different things like that you're going to need, that you could need for identification. One of the things that should pop up too, I mean, and you guys can help me out with some of the things that you should include with your goods, would be some cash, because odds are, it's going to be disrupted. And regardless of how much you got or how much you have on hand, you should try to keep it in smaller bills too. I mean, even if you got rolls of coins and, mm-hmm. and other things, but predominantly $100 to $200 is a nice place to at least have that much on hand that you could have access to. What you guys say?
Oh yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Gotta have something in case.
Anything else that you would want? I mean, naturally, like we talked about, as far as some of the personal information in there, there's any number of things that you could want to keep copies of with that list. Another thing too, just in protection. And whenever I was 16, we had our house burned down to the ground while we were out of town, actually in Kentucky, and. Whenever you come back to 6 inches of ashes, you don't really, there's a lot of stuff that you don't think about that you really need that you don't have access to.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things in particular, it's a good idea to have copies of that important stuff. Maybe even digitize your photographs or whatever have you and either keep it at a family or friend's house safe deposit box, anything like that, because you just there's no redos on that kind of stuff. So it's a
once it's gone, it's gone.
It's something to keep in mind. You know, it could be a tornado, it could be a fire, it could be other things too, and the personals you're not going to get back. Now you had mentioned, Richard, one of the other things that you could do whenever you are out and about is there's some pretty neat little devices now. There's little solar panels that are actually reasonable that can help charge energy cells during the course of the day that you could run some equipment on or even some types of utensils. So that's pretty interesting. My suggestion would be that you just go into a Cabela's or one of these others, and I'm not mentioning Bass Pro in particular, even though they've got great stuff. It's just that Cabela's tends to lean a little bit more toward camping and stuff, and Bass Pro is a little more toward the gamesman. Mm-hmm. And that's just and again, it could be your local little stores. There may be a actual emergency preparedness or disaster type themed store in your area that you could even check with.
Yeah, you just have to check that stuff out, search for it and find out where it's at. Like Pat said, there's just tons and tons of useful information. Just do a search for survival supplies, you name it, and that's the best way. That's where I found most of my information outside of a couple of books that I've gotten to have something that I can sit down and read whenever I want. But that's real important to familiarize yourself and look at this stuff and see what's available. And, the other thing is you'll get reviews on a lot of this stuff from people who have purchased it.
Right.
And they'll tell you neat things that you can use it for that you might not have thought of. That's the big thing. So.
The great thing is, too, is that you could utilize a lot of these during family. Some people may think it's odd or whatever have you, but until you really talk about bonding, and you can utilize a lot of these things on camping trips and stuff. Have a little fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
Do some other things. I mean, whether it's building that open pit fire to actually cook your meal and using a couple of heavy sheets of tin foil, and wrapping your food up tight in that. Of course, you're going to need some sort of moisture, whether it be a tablespoon of water, or else you could use certain vegetables and stuff to keep moisture inside it. Stay away from the open flame. Just put it more on the hot coal if you can. That kind of stuff can really be fulfilling as far as something that the kids remember. Just make sure. Couple of good advice on anything like that, especially if you're out in the wild like Pat was talking about being. It's a good idea to keep it further away from the tent and maybe downwind, so that in case any critters kind of catch wind of something they like and want to kind of shuffle around in the night while you're in your tent sleeping, they might be a little bit more downwind from you instead of keeping it. Eating in bed, let's say.
Yeah, don't keep it in the tent.
Absolutely
never,
not.
Never.
You often hear of campers and stuff pulling their gear up in trees and everything too to kind of keep the bears away and everything. Did you ever partake of that?
Yes. Yeah, and raccoons also. They'll get to it. They are so dexterous. They can open up containers. I've seen it. I've seen them open up containers. Sealed containers and take their little paws and eat graham crackers. They just sit there and they're looking at it like, hey, these are really good, It's unbelievable. Tied in with that, something really important.
They carry their own can opener around.
Oh, that's it. But they're prepared. Swiss Army knife. Okay. I just like to share this with a couple of people, and Kevin kind of alluded to it as far as outdoors. But this is something, let's suppose that we had a bad earthquake here. A couple of things for you, very quick, down and dirty. A lot of people say, if there's an earthquake, stand in a doorway. That's a myth. Don't do that. You don't.
And
stand
that's repeated over and over and over.
Yeah, that's
again.
Right. Don't stand in the doorway, folks. I've read interviews with an individual who goes in there and he rescues people, or he goes in after earthquakes. How many people are crushed in doorways, crushed to death? You don't want to stand in the doorway. You'd like to crouch next to a table, a stout table, or crouch literally next behind your couch.
And if anything falls or if the ceiling caves in, that will protect you. And then I have another rule for you, and I think this is really important. This is not just, let's suppose you're in St. Louis, and we do have a an awful earthquake. And so you're with your family or you're with some friends, and like Richard, let's suppose him and his wife and the kids, they live next to us, and it's like, well, I need to go get some stuff. I'll go out and get some things, or I'll go get help, and I'll see you in a little while. There's a rule here, and it's something I really pound into people's heads, and I hope you all remember this. And it just goes like this. Who, what, when, where, why, and how. Again, who, what, when, where, why, and how. Here's the bottom line. If you are going out into the wilderness, tell somebody, please tell somebody who you are going with. I stress this. Who you are going with. Tell them why you are going. Who, what you're going to be doing out there. Who, what, when. And this is the big one. Tell somebody, hey, Richard, I'm leaving at 3 o'clock, and I'll be back at 5. And folks, barring a disaster, be back at 5. Do not change plans in midstream. Who, what, when, where. Where am I going? Richard, Kevin, I'm going there. I'm going east of here. So you know where I'm at.
Absolutely.
Okay? And how. How I'm going and how I'm coming back. Did you ever hear the story about the guys out in, or the man out in Utah everybody thought was so tough because he went out by himself and he fell in a rock little crevice and he had to cut his arm off to survive? People
right.
say, oh, he was really tough. No, he's not. He's stupid. He's utterly stupid. If he had told somebody who, what, when, where, why, and how, that man may still have his arm.
Right.
So just, I want to stress that enough. Remember those things. Who, what, when, where, why, and how. It can really get you out of a pickle.
He was forced into that predicament because he did not tell somebody.
That's it.
And one of the things, here's a comment from Brenda in Wisconsin. She's kind of wondering if Pat is the guy on the reality program that gets voted off first. And she says he knows way too much to get past week one.
That's it. Yeah, but Lord willing, I'll live.
You know,
that was pretty good.
Lord willing.
I like that.
You know, one of the things now, the couch factor.
Yeah.
That's referring to the triangle of life. Care to divulge a little bit more on that in particular?
Just the literal idea that find something that, literally a triangle, that it will support an object. Like if anybody's watching right now, you have the corner of this desk. This desk is stout. I could get on my hands and knees crouched right in here, and if this building starts to collapse, the odds are that this desk, if something comes down, it will come down like this. It will hit here, and then that end will collapse down. But in this little triangle here, I'm safe.
Right.
I'm safe. I can't. The best thing, of course, if you could get outside. Okay, but if not, this is a really good area to be in.
Sure.
This is also, and again, this is from camping and rough situations. One of the biggest problems people have is they get cold. A couple of things for you folks. Remember this. This could literally save you. My hands are cold. Put on a, you don't have gloves. Put socks on. If you're out there, put on a pair of socks on your hands and you've got gloves. My head's cold because I'm starting to lose my hair. Just starting, okay? And so is Richard. We're just starting. Okay.
So am I.
There we go. There we go. Here's what you do. Wear a stocking cap. All the heat escapes from the top of your head. And people say, everybody knows that? You'd be shocked how many people don't practice it. And here's another one. It's night. You've been out. It's cold. And you want to go to sleep. One of the best things you can do is change your socks and put on a pair of dry socks right before you get in your sleeping bag. Because your socks are wet. Because your feet sweat, and your feet will get cold at night. One last point. People say, if I climb in a sleeping bag and it's cold, I'm cold, the best thing I can do is put the sleeping bag over my head and cuddle up inside there. That is wrong, and the reason why is you will breathe inside the sleeping bag, which will cause condensation inside the bag, and if it's cold out, that will get wet also. The inside of your sleeping bag will get damp, and you will not have fun.
All not right? at all. That reminds me of a story that one of my best friends tells. There was a group of about a half dozen or so that was on a little hike, and he thought that the lady that was leading them knew where she was going. Well, she didn't. She didn't, and to make matters worse, I mean, they were hours into this thing, and to make matters worse, obviously she had a broken compass, because finally somebody asked her, hey, you know, how much longer do you think before we we're kind of around civilization. And she said, well, I shouldn't be too much longer. And he said that she pointed directly into the setting sun and said, I know that that's north. And he said, we are in trouble.
Get the cell phone.
Needless to say, they are totally, I mean, they had no idea where they were at this point. He took a tumble about 40 feet off of a basically a bluff and landed in a creek down below. You know, I got down probably about upper 30s, maybe 40 at the top. So everything that he's got is totally saturated. They're not prepared for the night. They had to spend the night out there. He said it was the most miserable night of his life, easily. You know, he was just brutally cold. Yeah. But there's a, you know, so even just make sure that even on little jaunts like that, that you've got somebody A that you're confident in, and also educate yourself.
And the last thing, and I'm going to be quiet. Remember this: bring a whistle, water, and a whistle. Bring your cell phone too. But I'm telling you what, you can scream as loud as you want in the woods. Your voice is not going to carry. You scream for too long, your voice will get hoarse, and you will not be able to do it anymore. You can blow on a whistle forever, and it pierces through the terrain. Whenever I go out and wherever I take scouts out, we always bring whistles. That's it.
No, that's a great little suggestion.
A lot of the little survival kits that you can buy have whistles in them. You know, it's automatic for them.
Good deal.
Here's a little device at Cabela's that I found. It's a four-function survival tool, and it's you're going to see that it's priced at $8.99. And this is off the website, actually. But that's one of the things that it has. It has a whistle, a compass, a magnifying glass, and a thermometer with a lanyard. So, I mean, there's less than $10.
Yeah.
And you've solved a couple of the problems at least there.
Yeah, we just picked one up a little bit. It's a little bit more in depth than that, but it has a saw, you know, like a chainsaw blade. That's just a portion of it with a couple of straps on it that you can saw to cut wood. It's got a reflective mirror, signaling mirror. It's got a whistle. Got a couple of fire starters. It's got one of those flint fire starters, and a sealed watertight package about 6 inches by 4 inches, maybe an inch tall, that would easily slip in a pack or something that you'd have. So, and that, you know, I think that one was about $45. So, yeah, a lot of that stuff is out there, and once you have it, you got it. It doesn't go bad.
No, that's just like I had mentioned earlier, that little magnesium fire starter. That's another thing, $7.99. And that is something that that they claim, whether it's wet, everything else, it can just from sparking, it could send out, it ignites even when wet to a temperature of 5,400 degrees Fahrenheit. That's pretty amazing to me. It says to even light a stubborn campfire.
It's hot.
So less than $10, once again. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to close things out on this episode and to talk about what's coming up in future episodes.
Don't miss the Two Guys Talking feature film review of Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen.
Vulgar humor, robot balls, the thong view, minority bots. can we get a collective of everybody to say, we hate all of this? There's no need for any of it.
When Mike and I walked out of the theater, the two of us are like, okay, we just cut the vulgar.
We're going to close things out this evening in this last segment with just kind of brushing up on some of the food stuff and just talking about just general conclusion of what we've been discussing. Richard, you've got some things that you want to share with us?
Yeah, it's a basic supply list, and it covers some items that you want to, you know, store that you will need. And, you know, we covered some of these already, but I'll include them in the list. You know, water and storage supplies for water purification, that's number one on the list. And then you get into wheat and other grains, flour, beans, stuff that's easy to store and lasts a long time. A grain grinder, And again, we talked about this earlier, one electric and one manual if you can do it in case one fails. Cooking catalysts and seasonings, oil, salt, spices, a lot of that stuff, especially spices, when you're cooking bland food over a long period of time, you can have a lot of variety with different spices, and that really can make a difference. Powdered milk, dairy products, and eggs. A lot of that powdered supplies can last a real long time.
Absolutely.
I've been trying to get powdered eggs for 6 months, and you can't get them. I don't know what happened to them, but they've dried up.
Powdered chickens are now extinct.
Powdered chickens. That sounds tasty.
It's called bouillon.
Yeah, that falls
you can suck on the cube.
That's the seasoning, yeah. Sprouting seeds and supplies, and that has to do with fresh greens that are really nutritious and relatively easy and fast to grow. Then you get into sweeteners, honey, sugar, maple syrup. And honey, too, it's a natural topical antibiotic. A lot of people don't know that, so it doubles as medicine besides being really good tasting.
Because you keep licking it, right?
Yeah. It's like your dog, yeah. Canned and dried fruit, vegetables, and soup. Canned and dried or frozen meats and fish. Dietary supplements, vitamins, that sort of thing. Fuels, lighting sources, and camping gear. Again, fuels for fires, lighting sources for a wood fire or whatever else you can find to burn. Medicine and first aid. There's a whole lot of stuff available that way. I've even seen a backpack that was outfitted just like a medic's would be that has sutures, scalpels, I mean, an amazing amount of stuff in it, and it's relatively reasonable for what you get. Pet food. A lot of people forget about their dogs, and you don't want to have to be breaking open cans of beef and chicken to feed your dog, so it's important to have pet food stored up. And then personal items. Another big one is open pollinated seeds for gardening. Now, this is more long-term, but they're seeds that they're not hybrids, seeds that you can extract from the plant after it's grown, and you can save them and reuse them so they replenish themselves. And I've seen these in kits that'll grow a full one-acre garden with an amazing variety of stuff for like $120, and they're all, good reproducing seeds, so it's not a one-time deal like most of the seeds that you buy today. And then the last one is pleasure foods, snacks, treats, sweets, maybe a few beverages, stuff to make you feel good, especially if times are tough, a good candy bar, a special snack or something along those lines can brighten your day up if you don't have any other way to do it.
You might also kind of think about, what kind of candy bar, because some will, melt in your pocket.
Yeah, the chocolate ones will tend to disintegrate when it's too hot, so yeah, that's something important, too. And then the other one I had, a lot of people wonder, well, how much food do you need? Well, there's a lot of different ideas on this subject. This is just one that I got, and this basically covers an adult male for 1 year, roughly 2,600 calories a day, which is a little less than normal for most folks, but it's enough to sustain you. And I was surprised by some of these numbers, but as far as grains go, 375 pounds.
Wow.
That's a lot of grains. Now, that covers a lot of stuff, but like I said, that's the stuff that lasts the longest, and it's relatively inexpensive, too. And then you look at about 60 pounds of dried items like beans, peas, seeds, that sort of stuff that you would eat. Milk.
Here's a little bit different twist on that, Rich. And one of the things is that just think of all the people that are even, in your state or your community or anything else. Now multiply that by those people, and you're going to realize in consumption what we need to produce. If for whatever reason that production is cut off, things can get pretty ugly pretty quick. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're talking about a lot of stuff. You don't realize how much food you eat and consume.
That brings it to a new light.
Oh, yeah,
it does. Where you start counting those numbers.
Yep. They're talking about meat, dairy products, and eggs, about 60 pounds dry. Meat and meat substitutes. I guess it'd be like Spam.
Yeah, Boca Burgers.
Well, no, this is 20 pounds. This is 20 pounds dry, so might be talking about jerky,
right.
you know, dehydrated
right.
stuff like that. Fruits and vegetables, only 10 to 30 pounds dry. Again, that wouldn't be fresh stuff.
Right.
You're talking about
apricots and so forth.
Right,
dried
exactly.
out.
Stuff that lasts a long
sure.
time. Sweeteners, 65 pounds. And that's sugar, honey, syrup, that sort of thing. That's a lot of sweets. Fats, oils, and shortening, roughly 22 pounds. And that includes 2 gallons of liquid and 6 pounds of shortening, 1 pound of baking powder. Leavenings, like baking goods, 3/4 pound of dried active yeast, a box of baking soda, and 1 pound of baking powder. That was supposed to be in this one. Miscellaneous foods and seasonings, and this would be spices, sauces, condiments, cocoa, powdered cocoa, and then 8 pounds of salt. So that's quite a bit of salt. And then multiple vitamins with minerals, basically one a day, you know,
right.
365.
Sure.
So, that's...
We can't forget our daily medications either. And just like we had mentioned
right.
before, you know,
right.
you get, especially if you've got a child, a baby, an infant, you know, you got to prepare for them too, which might mean extra bottles, diapers, all the rest of that kind of formula and so forth
yep.
for them. Elderly, you know, they might have specialty medication or anything that they need. But those weekly pill boxes and stuff is a great way to keep if you've got more than one prescription, you know, if you've got 3, 4, 5,
mm-hmm.
it's just to keep everything lined up and in days because, yeah, you're liable to kind of misplace on some of the time structure, too. You never really know how hectic things are going to be or anything else, and you might confuse the days.
Right.
Did
right.
you take it? Did you not? You know, and that's a great way to kind of keep focus of things. We had one question in here, and it was from Ruben from La Crosse. He was kind of wanting to know more about the cooking side of things. You know, whenever we're talking about, you mentioned baking powder. You could go from an elaborate Dutch oven set up to which, you know, please feel free, just time constraints alone. We can't get in too in-depth with a lot of this stuff, but look that up. Look that up on the Internet, you know, Google Dutch oven. And Google some of these other things. You know, this BePrepared.com. The government's got one out there right now too, and that slips my mind as far as what theirs is too. It did have some good ideas on it. Now, one of the things whenever we're talking about that you can do anywhere, and that's cooking out in the open, that is something that you could do on a camping trip and stuff. But if you're in a campground or something, naturally they're going to restrict you to building within certain confined areas. You want to make sure that you're not violating the law whenever you're in the campground either or endangering anybody else. Some of the things you might want to look for, low-hanging branches, you don't want to be under them. Different ground cover, you don't want to be around dry vegetation. A good idea is to clear a 10-foot circle around the area where you're going to build the fire, then create a fire bed or a fire pit. You can also use rocks, silt, clay, sand, or any other non-flammable material to line that pit with. A small pit, approximately 4 to 10 inches deep, can serve quite well. Surrounding your pit with small rocks is another idea, is just added protection. But one of the, and I'm sure Pat and Rich are both aware of this, but, you know, whenever somebody says set up a cooking fly, you know, this is it's kind of like an old tarp or a heavy fire-resistant blanket that can be strung out between a couple of trees, poles, sticks, anything like that. It's a good idea to keep it facing away from the wind. It can help provide you a little extra protection whenever we're talking about unexpected wind, rain, sleet, or snow. We also want to dig our fire pit around 10 feet in front of the fly, but you want to make sure that, you know, the sparks won't harm the fabric. That is just a couple of the things. Now, whether you're cooking with a stove or an open fire, again, and I mentioned this earlier, you might want to cook 30 to 40 yards downwind from your tent just to kind of, especially anywhere where you're going to sleep, to keep curious animals away or at least to sidetrack them. One of the other things to remember is to properly cook your food. You want to make sure that you use 2 layers of heavy foil if you're going to wrap things up. You want to use tight folds to trap the moisture inside. As Pat was talking a lot about moisture earlier, You also want to make sure that you cook on the charcoal or the hot coals of the wood, never on the flames. You want to turn over the foil packet to cook evenly as possible as you can and prevent it from burning. Every foil dinner also needs that soy sauce moisture, and that can come from onion slices, some type of like soup substance, salad dressing, seasoning sauces, anything, butter, anything along those lines. You could also even use a spoonful of water. It's a good average as far as the cooking time is going to vary on how hot your coals are, but a decent average is around 15 to 20 minutes for hamburger and at least 20 minutes for chicken, sometimes longer for meats like steak. You also, hard veggies are going to take a little longer to cook. These are all just general things, and these are things that you can have fun with the family with. Not many of us have actually cooked a meal in tin. I'm back with tin foil again. I come from a very poor country. We couldn't afford aluminum foil. But that's just some of the things that you want to do. But the one thing you want to make sure you do, too, you want to make sure that you leave that area at least as good as it was whenever you found it. Mm-hmm. You want a good idea is to thoroughly douse your fire, mix it around with a stick or a shovel, then douse it again. Refill your fire pit or scatter your fire bed after that. And when you are packed up, you want to look around again, make sure you didn't forget anything, and make sure that you left everything in good shape. Just a couple of quick tips, and I hope that helps out, Ruben. Pat, you got any parting thoughts?
Real quick, down and dirty. If you ever want to make an oven outdoors, you can take a cardboard box. Don't make a little box. Don't make it too small. Take a cardboard box. Line the inside of the box with aluminum foil. Line the outside of the box with aluminum foil. Put it over a charcoal briquette fire. Each briquette's good for 20 degrees. If you need 400 degrees, you got 20 briquettes. And you can actually bake some. We've baked pizzas outdoors before.
That's cool.
And they turned out really good.
That's cool.
And nobody got sick. 20 degrees per briquette, I do believe.
It's a good idea for your Weber, too, folks.
Yeah.
If you happen to kind of wonder about that. Whenever you're out there, how much should I put in? That's probably the number one mistake that people make is just too many, and they just burn everything up before the inside gets cooked.
Half a bag.
Right. They have different size bags too. Any other closing words, Pat?
Well, I like what you said, Kevin. What Richard said. I enjoyed that. That's good. The food supplies, etc. Just the sheer magnitude of what you need to make it. Just in case to make it comfortably, and you got and it's not just for you. It's for like Kevin, like for your family too. You know, you got to think about your kids and stuff. So that's good. Thanks. That was real good.
Great year for a garden too, folks.
Yeah.
That's always a fun family deal too. It may not seem like it at times, but there's just a garden is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, we started our first little garden this year. It's the first one we've done, other than a tomato plant or two in the backyard. But yeah, we actually fenced off an area, not real big, but we probably got 2-3 dozen plants in it. We'll see how it goes.
You know, there's another thing. You look at the Midwest on down to the South. I mean, how many thousands and thousands of acres of farmland have we lost this year?
Yeah.
And they're not going to, it's going to be at least 2 months with the flooding of the Mississippi River before that water recedes. And then who knows if it's going to be usable or tillable for a couple of years, 2-3 years
before it can be planted again. Yeah.
And the thing is that that will have an impact on food sources. Whenever you look at a lot of the other countries, Australia, massive floods.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the other countries have suffered pretty major natural disasters that are tightening the food supply worldwide. And it's one other than just having fun, it may not be a bad thing to have. Closing out, Rich, anything else off the top of your mind?
Some of the other things, we covered food and items like that, but some of the other things that you can pack in that kit is, a deck of cards, maybe a book with card games.
Bingo.
Something to relax and occupy you because you're not going to have your big screen, you're not going to have your radio probably. Little things like that.
Pen, paper.
Yeah, pen, paper, maps.
you know, things that you don't think about until it's too late. But yeah, a deck of cards and a book of card games is real good. And then maybe you know, we talked about last week a little bit, a little small radio that'll get emergency broadcast, AM, FM. You can run on a variety of battery packs. It can be recharged. It can run on a crank, too. Something like that. They're not real expensive, maybe $60-$70 for a good one. They're really small. It doesn't take up much space. That's another item you could stick in a bag like that.
You know, I'm amazed at the efficiency of some of these small radios. I mean, I've got one or two that off of one AAA battery, you can get 30 to 40 hours of usage. That's a lot of usage off of one AAA battery. Maybe. So that's another thing to think about. Closing again, I'd like to thank you guys for coming in. I also would like to thank you for future participation in these episodes. Again, on the next episode, we're going to look at structure. We are going to, I've also taught disaster response courses, and there is a certain line of structure, too. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't think about it, but who's in authority, you know, is over who, as far as, you know, is a policeman going to be over a fireman? Is a fireman over a policeman? You know, any kind of things. There is actually an order that's been designed in these type of areas that are declared a disaster. And we'll touch on that. We'll also touch on personal protection and some of the other things that you might find a need for, whether it be against wild critters or against, I mean, you know, the necessity to do a little hunting or fishing or maybe just protect what you do have. Closing, Pat, yeah, thanks again for joining us, brother.
Thank you.
Anything else you want to share before we...
Plants. By and large, if you're really, really knowledgeable, don't go out there and eat plants. Never go out there and eat mushrooms and toadstools unless you really, really know unequivocally the difference between the two of them. All fur-bearing mammals are safe to eat and will provide you with nutrients and calories. All six-legged insects are safe to eat and will provide you with nutrients and calories. Most plants will harm you, make you sick, poison you, or kill you. Simple equation, if it walks, crawls, swims, or flies, the odds are that it's okay to eat. Including birds.
There we go. And I didn't know that about the six-legged insects.
Six-legged insects, yep.
Well, I'll be. Rich?
No, I can't think of anything right tonight.
Close
next,
it up.
Next week.
Looking forward to next week. So all of you all that are...
samples of protection in or anything like that?
Well, if anybody gets a chance, swing by Old Town St. Charles. Got some great eateries out here. And that is in Missouri. You're going to find that just a little bit west of St. Louis. Off of 70, just over the Mississippi or the Missouri River, rather.
We try to sample a new one every week.
Absolutely, and we're accomplishing it.
Yes, we are.
Work your way down the street.
Yeah, as we close things out. Thanks for listening, to guys. Thanks for coming in, and be careful going.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.